and good evening once again. This is John St. Germain, once again, your host for Crystal Silence League Hour. And thanks for tuning in once again. Tonight we're going to tackle a naughty topic, that of relationships, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And broadcasting live once again from Castle St. Germain, we'd like to welcome you. Our stone of the evening will be Aventurine. And I would like you to stick around for this. It's going to be a lively and interesting discussion. We invite people to call in with their relationship woes and tales. The guest call-in, of course, is 657-383-0525. If you want me to answer your call, you have to press 1. That will let me know you're waving your hand at me. So let's just take a moment or two while you gather your crystal balls, and we'll return in just a few minutes with our weekly prayer list. So stick around. John St. Germain with Crystal Silence League Hour. And for those of you who are new listeners, the Crystal Silence League was founded around 1917 by Claude Alexander Conlin with the intention to broadcast prayer and positive affirmation to those in need. And of course, it was started again on the internet by the Independent Spiritual Missionary Church for the same purpose. And prayer is always free. Feel free to come to crystalsilenceleague.org anytime and post your prayer request, and you can also join. And if you join, you do get a wonderful book on how to use the crystal ball for projection and attraction purposes. We discuss these techniques all the time on this show. And as is our custom, we read aloud a sample of the many, and I'm not exaggerating, thousands of prayers that we get each week aloud on the show. It is the custom of the pastors to print out numerous of these prayers each day and put them on our altars and pray over them with our crystal balls. And so please join me in prayer for the following people. I'll identify them only by prayer number and by initials. No names are ever read aloud on the air. And so let us begin, please. This is prayer number ID 34294. It's NN, who's praying for peace of mind, for peace and confidence, and empowerment. May she soon enjoy this peace of mind and confidence that she needs for her challenging time that she's going through. Prayer ID number 34293JN for reconciliation, for her love F to reconcile, and because she misses and loves him. This is prayer ID number 34292CC, again, reconciliation with S. Please may the chains that are broken be reforged by the spiritual power. This is prayer ID number 34291OS for healing. He needs to be healed from the psoriasis. So please may that healing take place very soon. We next have prayer ID number 34289. This is RP, who wants us to pray for her brother, who is an alcoholic, and that he be freed from this awful condition. This is prayer ID number 34287DW. Please expedite a deliverance of a package so that he can pay his bills. Hopefully that's already arrived. Prayer ID number 34286JA. This is an urgent prayer that his new job come about quickly and that it works very well for him. Prayer ID number 34282NQ. Please remove the woman coming in between her and her husband. and that their relationship and marriage be healed. Prayer ID number 34281 GGN. He's praying that he gets this job very quickly. He needs it fast because he has a family to support and they're financially constrained. Prayer ID number 34280 AD. Prays for the husband's job. May her husband A get the job and get a better job. Prayer ID number 34279 SG. She needs an apartment. Needs an apartment very well and needs the finances to improve and debt to disappear so that she and her love, Jay, can get married. Prayer ID number 34276 NS. She prays that she and her love, Jay, can feel the connection, that the connection becomes closer, and that that Jay understands that she does love her and that she does feel the connection between them. May that be so. Prayer ID number 34275 ST. Prays for forgiveness and the return of her love, D. May that soon happen. Prayer ID number 34274 TF. For the removal of curses. Needs all these curses to be removed and for the social circles to open up, please. And prayer ID number 34273 FC. Prayer for L. For his recovery from the pain and sorrow related to all of his past relationships and marriages. Prayer ID number 34272 FC. And prayer to help her conceive a child. May that prayer be answered. Prayer ID number 34271 EB. Please pray for her, she says. Please pray that B will send her the money via Western Union because she needs it very badly. Prayer ID number 34270 WL. Wish to hear from K that he has left M and that he is ready to come back. Prayer ID number 34269 DP. Please pray that he gets the interview for the position that he applied for. Prayer ID number 34268 KH. Protection from danger while she travels, and pray that the same protection is extended to all who need it. Prayer ID number 34267 CL. Please pray that he lets go the rage so he can connect with a healthy way with his partners. Prayer ID number 34266 LS, healing and protection. And this person prays, Dear Lord, please remove any negative energy around L and please heal and protect her. Prayer ID number 34265 LS, to reignite the love and passion between L and R. May that fire soon be reignited. Prayer ID number 34264 wants daily communication and visitation from D. He needs to be sweeter, more caring, and affectionate. May that happen. KL, please pray that God heals me, she says. Please pray that he removes all sickness and disease from my body. May that happen. May that happen quickly. May you be at peace and be healed. AL, may her feelings and her heart be healed. May her hurt feelings be healed and salved. MC, and MC wants to bless everyone who prays for her. MF prays for his wife K to end the affair and mends their marriage. May that happen too. May all these relationships in trouble be healed. KR prays for a new life away from pain and suffering and a life worth living. May her spirits be lifted and may the Great Spirit shine upon her and make her happy. Prayer ID number 34257 ZL. Please send a fiery wall of protection around the family and friends. They need a fiery wall of protection around the home, work, and car. Please send protection. This is the end of the prayers for today. May all these prayers be answered with the entire power of the Crystal Silence League behind them. May we send them love, may we send them affirmation, and may we send them our protection. Amen. Well, thanks for tuning in tonight. We have a very sticky topic, don't we? That's why it's a two-part show, relationships. And my goodness, we could all talk about that, couldn't we? And I do invite people to call in with their questions or their stories or their anecdotes about relationships. And, of course, the number for you to call is 657-383-0525, and then you press 1, and I'll try to get to you. And our stone of the week is aventurine, which is useful in relationships as well. So we do have this topic. I want to talk to you, first of all, about, I really don't know where to begin on this topic. It's really a huge topic, but why do relationships go wrong? This is something we're programmed. We're either created by the Creator or designed by nature to pair up for the propagation of the species. So why aren't we better at it? Why aren't we better at it? Of course, if we were better at it, spiritual counselors and psychic readers, you know, such as myself and my colleagues would be out of work, and psychologists and counselors, not to mention Dr. Phil and people like that, we'd all be out of work. Well, that would actually be an improvement, I guess. But why does it go wrong? Why does it go wrong? And I'm not just talking about the relationship between lovers, but between parents and children and coworkers and friends. And why is it so hard to get along with each other? You drive down the street and people scream at you. You, you know, you're trying to go through a door and people won't open it for you. And why is this? And of course, the answer is both complex and simple. It's just that people are miserable. People are miserable, and people have issues and problems, and people are messed up. And that's the end of the show. Come back next week. Now, they're very complex forces at work here, and you can take a very rational approach about it, or you can take a very esoteric approach about it. But the bottom line is that, like everything else that starts out looking very, very good idealistically, human beings are very good at messing things up. We have religion. Religion is a wonderful thing. We have politics, a wonderful thing. And we have relationships, a wonderful thing. But as soon as you get people involved in any of these, you can guarantee things are going to get messed up. Of course, the good news is that if you're determined, you can fix it. We are very good at fixing things. And this is why I believe this is so. The entire universe is geared toward entropic dissolution. The entire universe is ruled by entropy, the thermodynamic law that says it goes from order to chaos. This is the nature of the universe. The universe deteriorates from order to chaos, from a more orderly state to a disorderly state. Yet the human spirit, there's something in us that tries to create order from chaos. Now, can you dig it? We try to improve ourselves. We try to take our chaotic lives, our disordered inner selves, and we try to get better. And this is where we have hope. So let's start with a few basic assumptions. Love. We seek love from other people. We seek affirmation from other people. We seek to bond with another person and create something beautiful. And I believe this may be quite possibly our problem is other people, because we think that we can find happiness through somebody else. And this is our first mistake. I want to tell you that long, long time ago, many philosophers have said this. Of course, Buddha said it very, very well, in that he said, nothing distracts man more than the form of woman, and nothing distracts woman more than the form of man. And this is very true. Now, you can also, in the case of homosexuality, man and man, woman, woman, dog and cat, you know, whatever your sexual pairing is. But the bottom line is this, we're very distracted by each other. And this takes us away from a very simple fact, and that is that any answer you have for happiness is going to take us away from where the true source of happiness is, and that is finding peace with ourselves. You have to love yourself first and then love others. Now, since most of our relationships are with other people, if you think about that, it's self-evident. If you have a distorted sense of self, you're going to have a distorted sense of relationship with others. And so this is where really the problem comes in. We're wounded people looking at wounded others. And even in the best of situations, that's going to create problems. Now, in healthy environments, two loving people, two loving and compassionate people coming together can be a very healing situation. But what happens if one of those people is not healthy, and is not loving and is not compassionate. I want to step back for a moment and tell you that in high school I read this wonderful novel by John Steinbeck called East of Eden. And in it, there are two brothers, Adam and Charles, who are basically the retelling of Cain and Abel. They're two brothers, and they both fall in love with the same woman, a woman named Kathy, who, and this was before there were such terms as psychopaths and sociopaths, is described as having a malformed soul. Steinbeck said that while some people, and this is how he described this, and I'm going to tell you, I read this in high school and I could relate to it immediately. He said that while some people have visible deformities, such as they're missing an arm or a leg, Kathy had a deformity on the inside. She had things missing on the inside where nobody could see it. She was a woman of breathtaking beauty, but on the inside she was missing empathy and compassion. She was cold, cruel, and utterly incapable of feeling for anyone but herself. Now, today we would say that she was a psychopath. She was a psychopath. And Steinbeck, before any of the current trends of psychology, where this was even known, where this was even fully understood by psychologists, was so knowledgeable of human nature that he utterly described the psychopathic relationship between these brothers. She split the brothers apart. She turned them against each other. She murdered her parents, by the way. And she opens a brothel, becomes a madam of a brothel. Oh my God, this is a twisted tale. It's one of the greatest novels ever written. You should read it. And it does describe the environment, the genetic background, and the psychopathology of a psychopathic relationship. And so let's talk about that for a while, because I think this is a very important thing. What I find in my own counseling practice quite a bit are people who are either in or just out of a relationship with a couple of different types of people who fall into the ideology, the etymology of psychopathic personalities. And I want to get back into that in just a minute. Now let's get into that now, because that's really a very important thing right now. When two people meet, we tend to see others in ourselves. When I meet you, I think, well, you know, there's someone who's like me. We have similar needs, and what can I do for you, and what can you do for me? And then we reach a common ground of mutual understanding. Now, a psychopath, though, does not. A psychopath lacks empathy, and they lack compassion, and they're driven entirely by need. So when they meet you, their immediate reaction is driven from need. How can I manipulate this person to get what I need from them? Now, they're very good at imitating compassion and empathy, and they're very good at being charming and telling you exactly what you want. This is why a relationship with a psychopath is very, very confusing to the person involved. And then every action of the psychopath is designed to get something from you that they need. And so many people get involved in this and involved in these relationships. And the main psychopathic conditions I want to discuss today is a narcissistic personality disorder and the borderline personality disorder. I'm going to tell you that there are more psychopaths than you might think. In current psychology, it's known that psychopaths are drawn toward certain professions, and some of these professions, the greatest number of the number one profession psychopaths are drawn toward is the medical career, and oh, there's a question here. Are they criminals too? There are criminal psychopaths, but not all psychopaths are criminals, and the far majority of psychopaths are not criminals. When you start talking about psychopaths, people think of Hannibal Lecter and serial killers, and they are a type of psychopath, but they're extreme psychopaths. The type of psychopath I'm talking about is a functional psychopath who can get along in society, and they're not criminals. They're not murderers. They're not They're probably not even particularly violent. They're just emotionally dangerous. They're emotionally destructive human beings. These are the people I'm talking about. Although I'm going to tell you the red flags are the same for both. Now, the number one profession that psychopaths are attracted to are doctors, followed by lawyers, followed by politicians, and I think Fox News anchors. That's my own theory there at the end. So let us look into that for a little bit. If you know that psychopathology is a sliding scale, that some people are more psychopathic than others, just like some people are more bipolar than others, etc. You understand that some people are more of this than others. And let me tell you the current psychological model about that, by the way, because there are a lot of there's a lot of information out here about psychopathology on the dating information websites, and they lump everything together. For instance, you'll find psychopaths, sociopaths, bipolars linked together, lumped together, and that's really not right. That's really not right. Imagine a spectrum. On one end of the spectrum is depression, ADD, anxiety, bipolar disorder. These are things that you have. On the other end of the spectrum, borderline personality, psychopathic personality disorder, narcissistic personality disorder, histrionic personality disorder. These are things that you are. You're born with these. These are things that you are. And there is currently no effective treatment in terms of medication that can treat them. The others, they can be treated fairly easily. Bipolar can be treated very simply with talk therapy and medicine. ADD, the same way. Depression, the same way. When you start getting into psychopathic personality, there's really no effective treatment for it. There is a... they are what you are. You're born with it, like eye color. And the current theories of psychotherapy involve years and years and years of cognitive training to develop in them what people, what we could call baseline people, such as me and I would assume you, have, and that is an inner personality, an inner core, an inner observer that discusses past history with people. So let's give a few red flags, for instance, about psychopathology, and I'm going to give you some information about it. Probably the biggest thing I would like to give you here, how about some symptoms? And I'm going to tell you that it's always a mistake to try to diagnose yourself or other people, but how about narcissistic personality disorder? Now, I'm in show business. I'm going to tell you that I have run across many, many narcissistic personality disorder sufferers, and they tend to be attracted to show business as well. The main thing is that they're conceited, boastful, pretentious. They like to monopolize conversations, and they belittle and look down on people quite a bit. They feel entitled, and they expect special treatment. And they become angry and impatient, resentful. They want the best of everything, and they feel as though the rules don't apply to them. That, for instance, you might be in a relationship with someone who feels that they don't have to have a job, that you should support them, for instance. If you correct them, they belittle you and humiliate you. If you criticize them, they don't deal well with criticism, for instance. They have this exaggerated sense of self-importance. They want to be recognized as geniuses and superior and the best at everything, even when they're not. They don't have any evidence for that. They can't support it with evidence. They exaggerate their achievements and talents. They talk about how well they do in school and how great they did at something when really it wasn't. You know, they write something, they say, this is the greatest thing ever written, and you read it, and it's not. That's a good example. They they have all these brilliant schemes and these fantasies about how great they're going to be and how great they are, and if only people would recognize them. They also sometimes have persecution complexes, how everybody is out to get them, how the man keeps them down. And they require constant admiration from other people. Now, it's not as much so much that they need this, but they demand it. They demand constant admiration from people. They demand special favors from you and for you to go out of your way for them. But they will never recognize your needs or your feelings. They can't. They lack empathy and the ability to connect. They're envious. They envy people who have something they don't. But they'll say that people envy them. And they're very arrogant, very, very haughty. And when you talk to them, they'll run you in circles. They make no sense whatsoever. When you attempt to reason with them, they'll run you in logical circles. It's called they'll cause you to run in circles, and it's called word salad. They'll just generate sentences and phrases and paragraphs that make absolutely no sense whatsoever. So the narcissistic personality disorder is one you can very easily identify. Now, there's a difference between being a narcissist and having narcissistic personality disorder. A narcissist is just somebody with an overinflated self-esteem, and you know they think they think they're the bomb and they're not. They can be helped with a decent dose of reality, reality check, but. Narcissistic personality disorder is a psychopathic condition. Now, I'll tell you that they have a lot of strategies. They devalue you, they derogate you, they blame other people. They respond to any criticism with anger and hostility. And this is the case. I know this in show business a lot. I learned this the hard way. A lot of performers I knew. They would do something, they would do a show, and then they'd ask my opinion. You know, they would say, "What did you think about this?" And I would say, "You know, that was a really good show. And at that point where you did this, and I'm very good at giving criticism, I would say, it might be more effective if you emphasized this part." And they would blow up. They say, "Well, I performed this act for the Queen of England, and I did it for 37,000 people at the Super Bowl, and nobody pointed out that I needed to emphasize that point." And so I'm like, okay, so if you wanted my opinion, why did you ask? Well, you see, what they wanted to hear was, "What did you think of my show? Oh, my God, that's the greatest thing I ever saw. You are a god. You are a god." You see, that's narcissistic personality. And this is what you get in relationships. Imagine a relationship where you have to kiss their ass 24 hours a day and tell them how great they are even when they're not. So that's your problem with there. So often they'll surround themselves with people who do their friends, their support group are people who do do that very thing. They worship them. So let's look a little bit more at the general psychopathic checklist. Some people are wondering, how do you know if you're a psychopath? Well, you probably would. It'd be very easy. There are tests you can take, but I'm really self-diagnosis is kind of a specious thing. Usually, if you are, basically, are your relationships with other people in a lot of trouble? Do you have a hard time dealing with people, and do you feel disconnected and hollow? Do you feel that you're just empty and hollow, and you don't connect with other people? Do you lack empathy? Do you lack emotional recognition? Do you not understand how you feel? Do you not understand how you feel? Can you not tell how other people feel? Do you have no sense of moral judgment? Do you have indifference toward moral beliefs? Do you just have no? Are you amoral? So these are very easy to spot. They're very easy things to spot. I'd like to move on now to the borderline personality disorder, and this is the one that gives us a lot of trouble. Sometimes it's misdiagnosed as bipolar disorder because of the mood swings in it. It takes a lot of practice in the mental health field to spot this. Borderline personality disorder is another one of those psychiatric nightmares because it's very difficult to treat. There's no medication that helps it, and it's characterized. The red flags for that are, I'll tell you that it has short attention span, it has impulsivity, it has instability of actions, interpersonal relationships are terrible, there's manipulation, fear of abandonment, intense anger and irritability. They will alternate between being your best friend and your worst enemy. And the reason for that is they live, they're completely need-based. They live in the now. So as long as you're doing what they want, you're their best friend. But as soon as you stop doing what they want, you become their worst enemy. And this is because, what I understand, talking to current researchers in this field, they have no sense of history. You know, such as like if you and I know each other for years, we build up a history. And I think of you as a great guy. Well, you might do something that makes me angry, but I still think you're a great guy. You just did something that makes me angry, and I can still be your friend. But for the borderline, they don't have that sense of history. So as long as you're doing things that please them and meet their needs, and they're very needy, very need-based, you're great. But as soon as you do something to make them angry, there is no history. There's no sense of history that you've always been a great guy. Now you are not a great guy, and boom, they hate you. And I've seen this in action. I've been on the receiving end of it, actually, but that's another story. You can read about that in my biography, Tales of an Unrepentant Mountebank. Now, there's another red flag about it. The hot and cold behavior is a red flag that distinguishes it from bipolar disorder, and the other one is self-harm. Borderline personalities will often cut themselves or burn themselves. They self-mutilate. And these are two red flags. Sometimes people are diagnosed as bipolar because of the mood swings. And but then if they're cutting themselves and they do that hot and cold with their friends, and there's some ADD involved too, sometimes it's diagnosed as ADD, then that raises a red flag as far as I'm concerned that there's that. It's a very problematical diagnosis. And I'll tell you that they have out-of-control emotions. The interpersonal relationships are terrible. They split people apart. They'll turn families against each other. They'll turn friends against each other. They'll turn therapists against each other. There was a joke when I was in I was a psychiatric tech at the state mental hospital, and there was a joke they used to tell that if you knew you had a borderline patient on the floor because the staff would be split and arguing about her, half of the staff thought she was a saint, the other half thought she was a devil. That's how you could tell the staff would be split. They split people apart. A couple can go into couple counseling, and one of the couple will be about borderline, and the borderline person will win the therapist over to his or her side and try to turn the therapist against the other person. They'll be splitting, and it takes a tremendously gifted therapist to deal with borderline personality. They're usually really smart, very cunning. And here's the dangerous part in personalities and dealing with psychopathic personalities. They study you and they reflect back to you exactly what you want. Imagine you go on a date with somebody and you've been out in the battlefield, you had a few relationships, you've had some good ones, some bad ones, et cetera, and you think you know your chops. You go out on a date with somebody and they seem really charming and funny and friendly, and they let you do a lot of talking, and you begin to think, this is a very interesting person and they're really interested in me. And then they seem to like the same things you like. And then you notice they seem kind of tough and everything, but then you notice they're kind of vulnerable. They've been hurt, maybe. And you think, well, maybe I can help them. Maybe this is the person I've been looking for. And then over time, in a very short time, they open up to you and they say, I've been hurt in the past and I've never really trusted anyone, but, I feel like I can trust you. I feel like I can be safe around you. And you start to open up to them a little bit more. Now, this isn't necessarily the sign of a psychopathic relationship. This can be just, you know, a date going really well, okay? So don't, if this happens to you, don't go, oh, my God, it's a psychopath. It could be just be a date going really well. You might be really making a connection. But just realize this. For a psychopath, this is not making a connection. This is reeling you in. And then you have this relationship, and you just fall deeply in love with this person. This is the best sex you've ever had, the best relationship you've ever had. They love you so much. They need you so much. They just need you so much. And then it changes. They start to pull away. They start to get offended by things you said. You start to feel jealous and uncertain. You start to walk on eggshells. You start to begin to wonder if they're seeing somebody else. And no real proof there, but they just don't seem as passionate as they used to be. And they stay gone, and they're remote, and they're distant, and maybe they're off in the other room texting somebody. You know, you say, hey, I love you. They go, yeah, I love you too. You know, right back at you. And this is after they've, you know, you've fallen deeply in love with them. And then the manipulation starts. You know, you think, well, maybe if I travel harder, maybe if I do this, maybe if I do that, and they encourage that. You know, maybe if I give them a little bit more of this, and maybe if I try a little bit more of that, until there's nothing left of you. And now usually while they're doing this, the psychopath is grooming your replacement. Because they're going to drop you and then pick up somebody else. They're grooming your replacement, and it could actually be someone you know. A lot of the stories I've heard, when people have called me and they've told me these stories, I started hearing these stories when I was in my 20s. When I started doing readings in my 20s, I started hearing these stories, and they say, yeah, and then he was, you know, next thing I know, he's with one of my friends or my sister-in-law or my cousin, or in some notable cases, my mother, or my brother, or my father. So they find somebody around you, and they groom them to be your replacement, and that's part of the splitting. They split off. They split you. They also, they'll isolate you from your friends and family. They try to get you apart from your support system so that you're isolated and alone. And the worst part about all this is that you begin to doubt your feelings. You don't know that your feelings, you think, well, maybe I am jealous, maybe I am oversensitive, maybe I am suspicious. And even after the breakup, you don't trust your feelings. You've been wrong so many times in that relationship and ridiculed and humiliated that you say, when you start getting yourself back, you start getting your self-esteem back, and you get angry, and you say, I'm really mad at him. Is it okay for me to feel that way? You start asking for support from your friends, for affirmation from your friends or your therapist, or whatever. You say, I feel betrayed. Am I right to feel betrayed? Is it okay for me to feel betrayed? Am I right to feel betrayed? And when you start doubting your own feelings, you know you've been screwed over. Now, I want to tell you that most of the literature based on that's about psychopathic relationships has been written from the victim's point of view, and therefore is unsympathetic to the psychopath. And when you think that psychopathology is a condition that you're born with, you understand that the psychopath is operating out of the same motives that we all are, out of need, and that this is how they do. This is what they do to survive. And studies have shown that psychopathology is about 48% genetic and 52% environmental, that there is genetic component, but there's also environmental component. And so, you know, as they say, genetics loads the gun, environment pulls the trigger. That's the same with most of these things, bipolar, depression, you know, clinical depression, anxiety disorder, sociophobias, things like that, social avoidance disorder. Genetics loads the gun, environment cocks the trigger. So if you're looking at a functional psychopath, you're looking at someone who had the genetic background, but also there were some environmental factors involved as well, very likely. And this is how they learn to survive. This is how they learn to survive. So while we pity the victim, we certainly have compassion for the victim, we also have to look compassionately at the psychopath. However, that said, because you have a condition that harms others, you have accountability to get better or to be aware of that condition and do something about it. I have known psychopathic people, borderline personality, narcissistic, who've sought help and have got better. So it's not a carte blanche to go around creating the destruction that these people leave in their wake. And when they know they do it, they're aware of it. They see what they do. It's just that an untreated psychopath doesn't care. But some of them realize it. They do a comparison and they realize this is not how the norm is, and I don't really want to be this way. And then they try to get better, and they work very hard at doing it. And the recovery stories are very inspirational. It's inspirational. You know, bipolar people who get out of control and do destructive things to their loved ones often get into therapy and take their meds, and the condition is controllable. Those who do not say they don't want to take their meds because they miss getting high. They miss the highs, the manic phase. Well, you know, sorry, but there's accountability for that. The manic phases cause you to destroy people's lives. So there's accountability. There is accountability. And so I'd like to give you some red flags in spotting this. This is for self-defense. And here's some red flags for the characteristics of psychopaths. Now, there's some professional research you can check out. There's a person called Cleckley, C-L-E-C-K-L-E-Y, and there's another person called Hare, H-A-R-E, and they have a psychopathy checklist that you can go down. And you can probably find those on Google, but let me just give you some sense of how you can determine whether, just some ideas about whether you're in a psychopathic relationship. You always feel on edge, but you crave desperately for them to like you. You feel uncomfortable around the person, but you still want them to like you. And you write off their behavior. You make excuses for them. You write off their behavior as accidental, or maybe they just thought they're insensitive. And you're in constant competition with other people for their attention and praise. They don't seem to care when you leave their side. They can just as easily move on to someone else. So you're grateful for the attention they give you. They use sex as a tool for control. Now, they hook you by flattering you with sexual praise and flattery. You know, you're the best lover they ever had. Then they suddenly become uninterested, and you feel desperate. And you're the one that always initiates physical intimacy. And then they insult you. They may use derogatory terms, insult your manhood, or insult you. If you're a woman, they'll call you a whore. If you're a man, they'll call you, they'll make fun of the size of your organ. And they might just always say, I'm not in the mood. I'm just not turned on. I'm not interested. With social media now, with Facebook and things, they'll get all over your social media. They'll plaster your Facebook with all kinds of comments and likes and things, and they text you all day long. And then you come to rely on that attention. You think, oh, all this affirmation. Then they just cut you off. And then they start doing it with other people in front of you. They start liking and doing comments on other people's Facebook pages and stuff and leave you out. Almost immediately, they say you're the love of their life. Almost immediately. And for some reason, you like it. You don't find it creepy like you might with somebody else. After a few dates, you do most of the talking, and they're fascinated by you. They're enraptured by you. Now, this is a very interesting thing, and this is part of the beginning of splitting. They compare you to everybody else in their life, ex-lovers and friends and family members, and they idealize you. They tell you how much better you are than their ex-lover, how much better you are than some of their selfish friends and stuff, and how good they feel around you. And they lie about stuff, even though they don't have to lie about it. And they blame other people, and nothing's ever their fault, and they rationalize a lot. And it's the lies just for the sake of lying that's a red spot. They're bored a lot. They don't have psychopaths don't have a startle response. That's one thing about them. You can't startle them. They don't have, oh, my God, oh, my God, that's great. They don't have a startle response. They don't have anxiety, fear, or worry where you should. They have flat affect, and they're very easily bored by familiar things. And at first you think, oh, man, they're kind of cool. They're cool and calm. But when you show excitement or or human emotion, you know, they're like, calm down, you're embarrassing yourself, you know, don't you know, you're overreacting. And they become condescending to you, and you know, they smirk at you, the normal mode of communication becomes contempt. They belittle you. They belittle your intelligence and your achievements. And if you complain about it, they say you're hypersensitive and overreacting. They use the social networking to provoke jealousy and rivalries. That's, again, splitting. They'll make you jealous of your own friends. You know, they'll flirt with your friends and try to get you jealous of your own friends. And this is a deadly thing. And I tell people this. You find yourself playing detective. You're scrolling back on their Facebook. You're doing Facebook stalkings and looking, trying to find connections, who they're with now and what they're doing now. And this is a red flag. I tell anybody. I said, if you find yourself in a relationship and you're playing detective, it's time to get out of the relationship. Get out. If you find yourself playing detective, get out. Time to get out. That's your instincts telling you get out. Then they like to surround themselves with their exes, their former lovers, not even exes, but their former lovers and potential lovers. They're always saying stuff. Yes, so-and-so's got the hots for me. So-and-so's got the hots for me. So-and-so wants to sleep with me. Yes, so-and-so came on to me all the time to get you worried about it. You feel jealous, and it makes you feel like this person. Remember the narcissist thing? They make all these passionate statements, but they don't display them. They might give you a card that says, "Oh my God, you're the love of my life, and I love you so much," but they never express that. And they can tell you things like this. They say, "Well, I've never been so happy in my life," but the voice doesn't convey it. "Yeah, honey, I love you so much. You're the best thing that's ever happened to me." But see, there's no. It's like a robot, and this is because, imagine this. They can't feel it. They're kind of like an alien. Or a computer trying to figure out how would a human being do this. Now, over time, you become the only person that sees their true colors, and you try to explain it to other people, and other people think you're crazy. I've been in that predicament. I know other people have been in that predicament. People say, no, you're all wrong about this person. You know, he or she is really nice. You go, no, you don't understand. This is an evil human being. Now, they'll poke you and make you mad, make you jealous, and make you upset, and then accuse you, say it's your fault. They can't empathize at all. They can't understand what you're feeling or anybody else is feeling. You find yourself always talking to them about their ex-lovers. They're always talking about their ex-lovers. You know everything about their ex-lover. You know everything about them. You know their shoe size. You know what they like to eat. You know everything about their ex-lover. And occasionally, and quite often, you find yourself explaining basic human reaction to them. You find yourself trying to explain to them why you react the way you do. You're schooling them in human 101. You try to get them to understand honesty and empathy and kindness. You say, people don't act this way. When someone does something for you, you want to pay them back. And they go, why? Why should I? Because it's the thing to do. People do nice things for you. You want to do nice things for them. You see, you're trying to explain this to them. They tend to overemphasize your mistakes while trivializing their own mistakes. For instance, if they're 2 hours late to a dinner, and you go, "You're 2 hours late." "Well, you were 10 minutes late to my birthday." You see, something like that. And there will come a time when they're just suddenly completely bored by you. You're just, all of a sudden, you're nothing to them. And they're hypocrites. They have high standards for you and low standards for themselves. Also, they have different personalities, and this is the scary thing. They can be a different person to you, a different person to their family, and a different person to their friends, a different person to their coworkers. And sometimes they forget who they're supposed to be around you. And all of a sudden, you find yourself talking to an entirely different person than the person you fell in love with. Can you dig it? You're in love with one person, and all of a sudden, you're talking to someone entirely different. Different personality, different language, different phrases, different way of talking, different way of thinking, different way of acting. And it's like someone walked out of their body, and someone else took over their body, like an exchange of consciousness took over. And I can tell you from experience, there's nothing more scary than that, than thinking that your wife's body was just taken over by a complete stranger. it's like they forget who they're supposed to be, which costume to put on, which mask to put on. And that's about the time you start to realize, okay, something's wrong here. And you begin to realize that they've had a lot of crazy people in their life. They also find they're good at ferreting out your deepest insecurities. Whatever you feel really insecure about, that's what they flatter you about. If you have a big nose, they talk about how beautiful your nose compliments your face. If you're a little bit overweight, they'll call you curvy or muscular. If you like to be entertaining and funny, they'll say you're the funniest person in the world. And whatever your fantasies are sexually, they'll do them. And another thing about it, normal couples fight. You know, they fight and argue, and it's okay. But with a psychopathic relationship, you feel that any time you fight with them, that could be the last one. They make it clear that any negative conversation could very well be the last one in your relationship. You know that could be it. It's done. We're done. You know, we're through. This could be, you'd be arguing over who washed the dishes last. Oh, this is it. This is it. They love to humiliate successful people. They love to do that. They expect you to be a mind reader. You're supposed to know exactly what they want, when they want it, and without them telling you. And if you don't, they humiliate you. They have a huge thirst for attention. And you will, after a relationship with them, you won't trust your own feelings. You'll be drained, used up, and you won't know whether you're coming or going. So these are some of the warning signs of psychopathology, and if you're in a relationship with one. Now, as I said before, we often go through life with this feeling that there's some good in everybody. That, you know, if you just work hard enough and love someone enough, you can bring out the good in them. After you've been in a relationship with a person like this, that belief is something in your past. You realize that there are people that you just can't cure with love. And you emerge from this thinking, you know, your world is a different place. You become a little bit more guarded, a little bit more suspicious, a little bit more, a little less trusting. But you shouldn't let it shut you down. You shouldn't be afraid to go out and love again. You just learn to be a little bit less trusting and a little bit more enlightened. Because, you know, next on our list of things we're going to look at are people who say they're afraid to love and how to have a healthy relationship. So I don't want to leave you with something so scary as psychopathetic relationships, because even though they are more common than you might think, there are very, very healthy ways to have relationships. And so what I'd like to leave you with is something a little more healthy than that, and I would love to give you a little bit of Stone of the Week first, which is a aventurine. You might want to go out and get one after this show. Aventurine is a stone that has projective powers, and their powers are mental powers, good for gambling, good for money, good for peace, healing, and luck. And it's the peace and healing that I think it's very good for. You can wear it to strengthen your eyesight, and you can also use it for increasing your perception and to stimulate creativity and enhance your intelligence. Aventurine, you can make a tonic from it. You can soak it in water and drink the water. It strengthens the psyche. It strengthens an individual sense of self. And if you're looking for a positive view of life, that's another good one. It gives you tranquility and patience, an inner equilibrium, and if you place it on the heart chakra, it'll help remove anxiety and help in the treatment of psychosomatic disorders. So you see, this is a very, very good stone for all the things we've been talking about. A healing thing, if you're getting out of a relationship where you've been run over the ringer, this is a very, very good thing. It enhances your sense of humor and cheerfulness, just all those things that you might need healing from. Someone asked me, how do you place a stone over an area of the body to be healed? And they said, you know, you're laying down and you have a stone on you. I said, no, I wrap it around, use an ace bandage. Put the stone over the part of the body, like if you're using a stone to help your joints, for instance, or a part of your body that's sore, put the stone against your skin and wrap an ace bandage around it. You know, you can put several stones, like I use flat stones, of course, and put them against your leg and wrap the ace bandage around it. A lot of people, you know, wear them as amulets and things, but some stones you want to wear around your joints or around your arm or around your rib cage next to your heart, use an ace bandage. So that's just one way to do it. All right, I'd like to read you something, and this is... we're going to use this in place of our regular meditation to bring our minds at ease here at the end of this very frightful discussion. So just everybody take a deep breath and relax. Because after this episode, no one will ever have a relationship again if we're not careful. Ah, yes. Take a deep breath and relax. This is from Khalil Gibran's The Prophet, and it's on relationships. And someone asked him to speak of relationships. And this was his response. He says, "Let there be spaces in your togetherness, and let the winds of the heavens dance between you. Love one another, but make not a bond of love. Let it rather be a moving sea between the shores of your souls. Fill each other's cup, but drink not from one cup. Give one another of your bread, but eat not from the same loaf. Sing and dance together, and be joyous. But let each one of you be alone. Even as the strings of a lute are alone through, though they quiver with the same music. Give your heart, but not into each other's keeping. For only the hand of life can contain your heart, and stand together, yet not too near together. For the pillars of the temple stand apart, and the oak tree and the cypress grow not in each other's shadow." And he goes on to say, "When love beckons to you, follow him, though his ways are hard to see. And when his wings enfold you, yield to him, though the sword hidden among his pinions may wound you. And when he speaks to you, believe in him, though his voice may shatter your dreams as the north wind lays waste the garden. For even as love crowns you, so shall he crucify you. Even as he is for your growth, so he is for your pruning. Even as he ascends to your height and caresses your tenderest branches that quiver in the sun, so shall he descend to your roots and shake them in their clinging to the earth. But if in your fear you would seek only lover's peace and love's pleasure, then it is better for you that you cover your nakedness and pass out of love's threshing floor into the seasonless world, where you shall laugh, but not all your laughter, and weep, but not all your tears. Love gives naught but itself, and takes naught but from itself. Love possesses not, nor would it be possessed. For love is sufficient unto love, and think not that you can direct the course of love. For if it finds you worthy, directs your course, love has no other desire but to fulfill itself. But if you love and must needs have desires, let those be your desires, to melt and be like a running brook that sings its melody to the night, to know the pain of too much tenderness, to be wounded by your own understanding of love, and to bleed willingly and joyfully." And those are the words of the prophet. And so, for this last couple of minutes that we have, everyone take a deep breath and let it out. And understand that although love is a risky thing, although love is sometimes a terrifying thing, love is also a worthwhile thing. It is a worthwhile quest. And understand that, like any dangerous and worthwhile quest, you have to be educated about it. You have to be well-armed about it, and you have to look out for yourself, and you have to look out for those you love. Stay tuned, or in the streets with Beverly Smith, one of our favorite shows. Come back next week for part two, Relationship. And this has been John St. Germain. Thank you. Crystal Silence League Hour. Thanks for tuning in once again, and see you next week.